Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. And today, I'm here with Victor Crosthwaite Contreras, who is a descendant of the early Spanish soldiers who came to found the missions of California. He's also descended from one of the early sheriffs of Old Town. He's a professional actor, writer, historian, and educator. He puts together presentations about people who actually lived in California in our past, for educational groups, and he's here today with us to talk about a very special birthday coming up, the 250th birthday of the city of San Diego's founding. Victor, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to get together with you.
Yes, this is not your first visit. We've enjoyed some of your historical characters on here before.
So absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about what's coming up for the 250th birthday for San Diego.
This year is the 250th anniversary of San Diego. And there are a number of activities being held throughout the city and throughout the county, because although we focus on San Diego as a city, but remember, most of the cities that are now in San Diego County did not exist at the time. They were just ranchos.
Right. I know there's been some activities that you weren't involved in directly, including some things at the San Diego Mission, where later this month there's some presentations of James Hubbell's artwork and some special ceremonies that are going to be coming up all summer long. There's been some things at Old Town, but you're involved with some programs coming up in Bonita, I understand.
Now, remembering, Bonita didn't exist as a city back then. It was a rancho. So it falls into the 250th anniversary because they were ranchos there.
So this is the Bonita Museum and Cultural Center presenting Nuestra Frontera, our South Bay Families at the Border. There's a fundraiser June 29th, and then there's going to be a big event coming up in July. Tell us about that.
July 6th. They call it Bonita Fest. So it's a celebration of the Bonita area. And at the same Bonita Museum, I will be performing all day during the day.
And these are community events, so you don't have to be
absolutely
wealthy to show up at these. It's a community presentation. And I understand you're also going to be doing similar presentations for some school groups, and you're looking for some help to make that happen. So tell us about the July event coming up at the Bonita Museum and Cultural Center.
July 6th, they're going to celebrate Bonita Fest, the celebration of Bonita. And if you recall, in the 1800s, there was really no Bonita as a community. There
right.
were ranchos.
Yeah, and those ranchos extended all the way into East County, even though it's a little bit of a misnomer to say it's South Bay Families at the Border, because their ranchos extended to Jamul and
well,
points further
we
east.
Yeah, when we talk South Bay, we go all the way east.
Okay.
So yeah.
Far from the water.
Yeah, yeah. So all the way east.
Yeah.
Because the ranchos,
right,
they were that big.
So tell us about some of the historical characters and stories that are kind of that are going to come to life at the Bonita Fest this year on July 6th.
Well, one of them I take a lot of pride in because it's actually an ancestor of mine, Bonifacio Lopez. Many people recognize Crosthwaite as a family here in the San Diego region. Crosthwaites are very prevalent and, of course, part of my family. But Bonifacio Lopez was Philip Crosthwaite's father-in-law. And he talks about the cattle industry. And the cattle industry, of course, is huge. Not any bigger in East County than any place else.
Correct.
I mean, East County is huge.
As an aside, I know you were telling me about the origin of the term cowboy was very interesting. It goes to the multicultural roots of our region, as well as, you know, somewhat to the prejudices of the nation.
Unfortunately, yes. I say unfortunately because it's evolved into something else. We don't have actual statistics. There were no actual statistics taken as to the ethnicity of the different people that worked cattle back in the 1800s. But we know a great number of them were African American, Native American, and Mexican. And the term cowboy actually came from, shall I use this word, go get that cow, boy, because it was an ethnic term referring to the Native Americans, the African Americans, and Mexicans. So it was a degrading term, because
yeah,
if you were white, you were a cattle hand or a cattleman or a wrangler.
Wow. Wow.
If you were ethnic, you were a cowboy.
So it wasn't until Hollywood came along and glamorized the whole thing and we had the John Waynes of this world that cowboy became a romanticized positive term.
It actually started with the nickel and dime novels of the 1800s where they glamorized the term cowboy. Because if you think about it, where in the European experience or the Eastern United States experience did they ever handle cattle this way?
Yeah, and the early cattle were not used primarily for beef in our region. Tell us about that.
In Texas, we are very familiar with the roundups and the cattle drives and stuff like that have been glorified so much in movies.
I should throw in here that my own grandfather was a cowboy on the Chisholm Trail in Texas, and his mother was half Native American, so he was one of those Native Americans who was also a cowboy.
Exactly.
So locally.
So locally, we didn't have those long cattle drives. We basically had what we called the matazón, which was a cattle roundup, if you will. And they actually selected the cattle that they were going to sell and butchered them right then and there for the hides, many times laying waste a great deal of the meat.
Yeah, San Diego was the center of the hide and the tallow trade also, right, which is used for
the
candles.
World, not just here locally.
Wow.
It was key to the world economy.
Now, there's a little-known ethnic angle to this also. Tell us about that.
One of the things that's true throughout the history of the United States is the last immigrant usually gets the worst jobs at the lowest pay.
True.
And that has been the history forever. At that particular time, the unique new immigrants were the Pacific Islanders that were coming in on the trading ships.
Fascinating.
So we had Pacific Islanders that landed in California, and what was there to do? The worst job at the lowest pay was tanning the hides at the harbor. So the tanneries were run by Pacific Islanders, and it's hard to find that information in history books.
Now, another of your fascinating stories has to do with your ancestor who was the sheriff, Sheriff Crosswaite. Well, I'll let you tell this story involving hounds and horse thieves.
One of the unique things that were happening during the Gold Rush era is law enforcement in the towns in California was difficult because the miners were actually celebrating to excess, which we don't need to elaborate a whole lot on. Somebody all of a sudden hits it rich, right?
Yeah, they partied hardy.
They did. And so some of the towns, rather than having a sheriff, had a group of men to enforce the law to try to get this celebrations underhand.
A posse, so to speak, or just a group of vigilantes in some cases.
Exactly. And that was the case in San Francisco. And they got a group of guys that were from Australia who were a mixture of law enforcement and criminals.
Oh,
because they were as much of a problem as the people that they were trying to control. So San Francisco had enough of them and said, that's it.
So you they guys kicked them out. So the lawmen were lawless and they kicked them out.
And at the same time, there was a significant Native American uprising coming here in Southern California as the Native Americans were being taxed for the first time for the cattle that they owned, not at the point of sale, but at the point of ownership.
So the no new taxes crowd back then was the Native Americans.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So the first year...
History repeats itself, doesn't it?
Absolutely. The first year, the Native Americans paid the tax. The second year, they go, wait a minute.
We're not going to do that. So in Boston, when this happened, it was called the Boston Tea Party, and they were all celebrated as patriots. But when the Native Americans rebelled against this, tell us what happened.
The Native Americans were trying to organize from the Colorado River all the way to the ocean.
In those days, when you didn't have cell phones and internet?
And you're talking about a lot of different tribes that had different agendas. So it was a major coalition that was being attempted.
Right.
By a Native American chief named Antonio Garza. Okay. Now, Antonio Garza was trying to unite all the Native Americans from the Colorado River. And so the California was trying to organize military forces to come down to Southern California to deal with this issue because they saw it as a significant threat. Here in San Diego, we organized a group of volunteers under a general named Fitzgerald, and they did a preemptive strike in the mountains and attacked the Indians first. That was very effective and dismantled their uprising. However, at the same time, the group of Australians from San Francisco,
the Hounds,
and they were called Hounds, probably referring to the translation of hounds to dogs. So it was meant as an insult that these guys were dogs because they were misbehaved. They were drunkards. They would fight among themselves. They were disrespectful. All of those things. So they came and they camped. First, they came and tried to join the U.S. military here in San Diego. The U.S. military wouldn't have them.
Okay,
because they were that disreputable. So they camped outside of San Diego and were coming into the town, getting drunk, gambling, fighting amongst themselves. There's an incident where one of their own stabbed their leader in a fight. So, I mean, they were disreputable.
Okay.
So Fitzgerald approached the sheriff, which was Philip Crosswhite, my ancestor at the time, and said to him, hey, look, I'm going to give you some of my men so that you arrest these hounds if you see them with any horses or any kind of animals that don't belong to them, because that's what we understand they're doing.
Yeah. And he promptly caught them with some stolen horses from a rancho that he recognized, right?
Yeah. The first incident was actually a mule that belonged to Bandini, which was a reputable person in the town that was well known.
So he goes,
oh, wait a minute. I know that mule doesn't belong to you. I know who that mule belongs to. Yeah. So they arrested him. Then later on, they found another guy with a horse. I arrested him. So the hounds came into the San Diego Plaza and confronted the sheriff, Philip Crosswhite, demanding that he release the guys that he had arrested. Well, here's a law enforcement. It's not going to release prisoners that violated criminal law to just anybody.
Especially someone who's committing crimes themselves.
Absolutely. So I said, of course, no. Well, then the hounds threatened that they were going to come back and kill Philip Crosswhite and burn down San Diego.
Kill the sheriff and burn the town. So what did the sheriff do?
So he goes out. There was a military presence by the harbor. So he went down to the harbor and said, hey, look, I'm going to need backup. This is getting serious and this is going to look ugly. He did not wait for them. He rode ahead back into town. He was discussing the situation with the judge, which was Judge Robinson, in the plaza when the hounds came back in. They confronted him again and threatened him and said, release these guys or else. Philip Crosswhite wasn't going to budge. He took a swing at him. Philip Crosswhite ducked this punch. Guy pulled out his gun, aimed it at Philip Crosswhite's chest. And if the gun hadn't backfired, I probably wouldn't be here today.
Oh, my goodness. What a tale that is.
The gun backfired when he's pointing it at his chest. So at this point, discussion's off. The fight's on.
Yeah.
Guns are drawn and bullets are flying all over. Philip Crosswhite got hit numerous times. As a matter of fact, the newspaper said he was mortally wounded. They expected him to die of his wounds. Okay. But he did shoot the hound that shot him in the leg in such a manner that the guy's leg had to be amputated.
And I understand that after that, Sheriff Crosswhite called in the military nearby, and they came in and quickly.
The military came in immediately right after that. It was just a thing of timing, and the hounds were no match for the military.
So what happened to them?
The military ended up arresting them all. They ended up cutting off the leg of the guy that shot Philip Crosswhite and presented it to Philip Crosswhite as a trophy.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, so you can appreciate different values back then.
And then they deported these Australians, the hounds, right?
They did a community collection. Okay, so that the community donated money so that they could get all shipped out, because obviously they didn't have the jails or whatever to keep all these guys
prisoners. So in those days, they weren't deporting the Mexicans. They were deporting the Australian immigrants that had come, the white guys. Okay. Listeners, if you just turned in, we're speaking with Victor Crosswhite Contreras, who's sharing with us some colorful tales that you probably haven't read about in your history books, all about the San Diego region's history, that are going to be brought out at this year's Bonita Fest, July 6th, as well as other events
around. The Fundraiser, July 29th.
Right.
And if you're interested, please contact the Bonita Museum. It's going to be a wonderful event, a dinner and entertainment as well.
That sounds great. And then the Bonita Fest, which is a community event later on, on July 6th, and Victor is looking for supporters to help him bring these stories to schools and other educational groups across the region, and it's all part of this year's 250th anniversary of the founding of the city of San Diego at the very first mission in California. So very historic events coming up.
I take a great deal of pride in the presentations that I do at schools, and please understand I do it at university level, secondary and elementary, and I've had wonderful experiences at all levels. For example, UCSD brought me in to do an hour presentation. The Q&A lasted for 2 hours.
Wow, I can sure see why, Victor. It's absolutely fascinating. So let's talk a little bit about the whole evolution of the border history. It's kind of one of those things, the more things change, the more they stay the same in some ways. We've seen both changes, but also some repetition of history happening over and over again. Can you share a little bit of your observations about that?
Well, one of the things that it's very much in the news today, and it actually has very deep roots that are misunderstood, is the military experience in the U.S. by Mexico. We, in fact, have huge percentage of U.S. military that are not U.S. citizens, mostly from Mexico. That's not just now. That's throughout our history.
Yeah, and for decades, centuries maybe, they've been honored for this service and rewarded with citizenship until now.
My father served in World War II. When he joined the Navy, he was still a Mexican citizen.
Yeah, and so the twist now is basically they come back, it's thank you for your service, and by the way, you're getting deported.
Now, I think it's interesting to look at the issue historically, because it makes even more outrageous what's going on now. I have an uncle of mine who also served in World War II, who was captured by the Nazis, and he shared with me how the Germans could not understand why Mexico, whose territory, half of their territory was lost to the United States. They figured Mexico would be a natural ally to the Nazis.
Interesting.
And the Nazis actually courted Mexico to join them.
Adolf Hitler.
Yet they couldn't understand why Mexicans would fight for the United States.
So it's a good point of why it's not a good idea to, tick off our closest neighbor, because you never know when you might need them as an ally if we ever have a future world war again.
One of the huge elements of World War II was the lack of labor in the United States because so many of the men were going off to war.
Yeah, we've heard about Rosie the Riveter and the women who came out of the house to go work, but that wasn't all.
Huge numbers of Mexican citizens that came to the United States and worked. Actually, there was an agreement, an official agreement between the United States government and Mexico to import labor at that time because we needed labor in all areas, not just factories.
So they kept our economy going on the home front back then while the American men were off fighting the war to preserve democracy around the world. So what happened to these sort of unsung heroes after the war?
Well, many of them, like my relatives, my father, my uncle, and stuff like that, became U.S. citizens. Another uncle of mine, my mother's brother, my grandmother made a promise that if he would return from the war, she would rebuild one of the missions in Baja California, which she did for a period of time. So the relationship and the love, we have tributes in Mexico, aka this rebuilt mission, aka a statue of Abraham Lincoln in Tijuana, aka many examples of Mexico acknowledging their love relationship with the United States in the midst of the events of today.
But not all the Mexican workers who came here to work during World War II were that fortunate. Some of them who hadn't become citizens, what happened to them?
Unfortunately, after World War II, there's, for many people, a little-known program of deportation. After bringing in all these workers, after contractually organizing with Mexico to bring in all these workers, after World War II, many were deported unceremoniously. If you're Mexican, you speak Spanish, you were deported, gathered up in cattle cars, and shipped by train back to Mexico. Thank you very much for helping us in World War II.
So the issue of mass deportations and, border conflicts, immigration issues is nothing new. It's sort of come and gone in waves throughout U.S. history, and we're again seeing a resurgence of that sort of thing today. What's your take, Victor, on, you know, 250 years from now, how people might be looking back on the new chapter in border history being written today, right here, right now?
Well, I think that part of the problem is the majority of the country really doesn't understand the border and the dynamics that happen in the border. Rent and housing is so much cheaper 5 miles south that it's actually a fraction of what you pay in the United States. So a lot of U.S. citizens, as well as Mexicans with documentation to work, live in Mexico. So when you have a shutdown of the border, they can't get to work.
True.
They can't come over here and participate. There's a whole shopping center in San Ysidro being the town closest to the border, for those that may not know, a huge shopping center that had to shut down. The whole shopping center shut down because of the closure, because their customers that come from Mexico couldn't come.
Yeah, it costs the San Diego region economy millions of dollars just for that very brief shutdown that President Trump ordered at one point. It's very, very costly. And of course, now we've got the trade war escalating.
Now, in comparison, it's like, who's really being hurt? Here's whole shopping centers and businesses that had to shut down because their clients or their employees couldn't get there. I guarantee you, because I go to Tijuana every week, there was not one taco stand that shut down in Tijuana with the border crossings. So who did it hurt?
Good point. And of course, you know, for folks in Kansas or wherever, they may not be aware of how many American goods are manufactured in Mexico. When we talk about Americans having to pay higher prices for goods because of the tariffs, we're not talking only about expensive guacamole from the avocados. There are cars manufactured down there, air conditioners, all sorts of things.
Well, something that many people don't realize is a lot of those minor products, and I say minor products because they're not necessarily a brand name, but let's say gloves, workout gloves, small things that somebody comes up with because of NAFTA. It became more economically feasible to build your factory in Tijuana and have those articles manufactured there and then brought back. In essence, it's really a U.S. manufacturer. But to take advantage of the cheaper labor, they build the factory across the border. So it looks like, tastes like an imported good, but in reality, it's U.S. driven.
Yeah. Well, I think we've got time for maybe one more colorful story out of our past. We were talking before we went on the air a bit about the Battle of San Pascual. Do you want to share a little bit about that one?
The Battle of San Pascual is particularly dear to me because I had ancestors on both sides of the battle.
Kind of like the Civil War for some people, okay?
Exactly. I had Philip Crosswhite that fought with the U.S. side and Captain Cota, which was one of the leaders of the Californians.
Okay, so what was it all about?
We had the Mexican-American War. The U.S. forces went to attack the Californios up towards San Pascual.
And the Californios, for those who don't know, can you explain what
the Californianos were? The people from California. And in this particular, because the Californianos were actually very divided.
So these are those Californians of Mexican descent. Yeah. It was their state, their area, before the U.S. suddenly decided.
Yeah, so they were people that were born and raised and owned land and lived here in California. Okay, and I refer to them as Californianos because in many of them, during their lifetime, they saw the government change three times.
Yeah.
It went Spanish, Mexico, U.S.
Okay.
Okay. So they were more attached to California than to any federal government.
You were telling me this is one of those rare battles in history where both sides claim victory. How can that be?
The American troops came and attacked the Californianos. It was in December. The weather was not so good. Back then, most of the weapons used gunpowder. Gunpowder doesn't work so well in moist weather.
Uh-oh. So what happened?
Okay. So the weapons for the U.S. troops were inoperable. The Californianos used lances both to herd cattle, but also as weapons of war. So they could ride through the American troops with their lances and inflicted heavy wounds on the American troops, where they suffered almost a 50% casualty rate.
So half of them died at the hands of the Californians.
Or were wounded.
And I know I've read elsewhere that that winter they were stranded there without supplies, that the situation was so desperate for the American troops that they resorted to eating their own mules at one point.
There's a Mule Hill, for those of us that are here in California, in San Diego. That's exactly where this took place.
So how exactly did the Americans claim victory out of that one?
A lot of these people, these Californianos that were on both sides, knew each other. As I mentioned before, I had ancestors on either side. So after inflicting such significant damage, they said, hey, we're done. We won. We're not here to massacre. We're good. And they left.
So basically, they just said, leave us alone, don't attack us, and we'll let the rest of you live.
We're good. We beat you. We're good.
Okay.
They had sent a small contingency, including Kit Carson, for those of you who like that little
trail
name.
Guide, and Western guide.
My ancestor, Philip Crosswhite, an Indian guide, and I think a couple other guys that they sent back to San Diego to get reinforcements.
What happened when the reinforcements came? So did they go after the Californios again?
They're coming up. The Californianos leave. The U.S. claims victory because they never gave up the land and they never gave up. And the Californianos are claiming victory because, hey, we won the battle and we didn't want to massacre you and we left you guys to survive. So both sides claim victory. It's a rare military battle in that respect.
Absolutely fascinating. Now, listeners, we are speaking with Victor Crosswhite Contreras. He's an actor, writer, all kinds of things, with these famous ancestors from our past that he's going to be bringing to life at the Nuestra Frontera event during Bonita Fest. And this will be held at the Bonita Museum and Cultural Center. There is a fundraiser. If you have a little money and want to come help out, that's going to be on June 29th. Or you can just come to the community festival at Bonita Fest on July 6th.
And in Old Town, August 17th. I'd like to share my phone number for booking or additional information on these presentations.
Please
here
do.
In San Diego. It's 619-777-9830.
Very good. We would love to bring you out and do a presentation with East County Magazine to educate some of our radio show listeners and our readers on our website, eastcountymagazine.org, about these colorful, undertold tales from our past in honor of San Diego's 250th anniversary this year. So if there's somebody out there who would like to help us make that happen, maybe you've got a venue that we can bring it out to, let us know. Victor, is there any last words that you have for our listeners today on this 250th anniversary here in San Diego?
I think that San Diego and California have such a rich history. And unfortunately, most of the history books, and I'm throwing this stone, if you will, at the Mexican educational system and the U.S. citizens, most of the history books are written back east and Western perspective.
Exactly.
And forget a lot of the nuances that are California.
Definitely. Well, if you want to get in touch with Victor and bring one of these presentations to a school or another organization, you can reach him at 619-777-9830. And we will be posting this interview on our website at eastcountymagazine.org. Again, we've been listening to Victor Crosswhite Contreras. Victor, I want to thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Always a pleasure.